Welcome to the Richardson Bay Regional Agency Board of Directors meeting for Thursday, October 8th, 2020. Public comment is invited concerning each agendized item pursuant to the Brown Act. Please limit your comments to 3 minutes. And I'd like to call the this meeting to order. Curtis, can we have a roll call, please?
Absolutely. Kate Sears? I see you, but you can't mute.
She's still muted.
There we go.
I am here, and I think I'm never going to mute myself again given the challenges.
Claire McCauley?
Here.
David Kulik?
Here.
And Chair Jim Wickham?
Here. Thank you very much. So the next item is the consent agenda. The consent agenda reflects those agenda items with prior policy approval from the board. Unless any item is specifically removed by a member of the public, those staff or the board, the consent agenda will be adopted by one motion. So is there any board member like to remove any items A and B? Okay, seeing none, is there anyone from the public like to have items A or B removed? See any hands raised?
Nope. There's one hand raised, Robbie Palson.
Okay, is Robbie, are you calling me regarding items A or B?
Hi there, yeah, this is Robbie Palson. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, Robbie, do you have item A or B? We're on the consent agenda right now. Do you want to request to pull one of those two items?
I just want to say
you want to wait until open public time?
Very well.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, seeing none, can I have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
I'll move.
Second?
Second.
Roll call, please.
Ms. Sears?
Yes.
Ms. McAuliffe?
Yes.
Mr. Kulik?
Yes.
And Mr. Wickham?
Yes. Okay, on number three, information item, presentation on community efforts. Kate, do you have any update or anything?
I do not.
Okay, do we have a representative, Curtis, from the Mariners who'd like to give us an update?
I have not been contacted by either Doug Storms or anyone else from, you know, what was the Mariners group for a presentation this evening. So I'm not aware of a prepared presentation.
All right. Okay, we'll move on then. Item number four, presentation of the stakeholder agreement engagement plan for the Richardson Bay eelgrass protection and management plan by Rebecca Schwartz. Coastal Policy Solutions, staff recommendation, receive presentation on progress and provide feedback. Rebecca or Curtis, you want to introduce this item?
Yeah, I'd like to introduce Rebecca Schwartz-Lesberg. She is the CEO and president of Coastal Policy Solutions. And we were fortunate enough to contract with her to assist on kind of laying out the foundation of the groundwork for our eelgrass habitat management program. And she's going to tell you all about it. I'm going to leave it to her to take it away from here.
Great.
Well, welcome back, Rebecca. Okay.
Thank you, Curtis. Thank you, Jim. Chair Wickham. I am a familiar face around here to many of you, perhaps all too familiar for some of you. I have a short presentation to share, so I'm hoping I'll be able to share my screen here. It looks like I do have that ability. Okay, so let's go to share. Okay, and let's hope that I can share this in presentation view.
Perfect.
Are you all seeing a white slide that says update on consultant services and it's in presentation view?
Yep.
We are.
Wonderful. So as Chair Wickham said, this is an update on the services that I'll be providing to Richardson Bay Regional Agency in fulfillment of some specific policy direction outlined in the agency's June 2020 transition plan. So what I'll be going over tonight is a little bit about who I am and Coastal Policy Solutions, some information about eelgrass in Richardson Bay, the specific policy direction in the transition plan that we're looking to implement here, and then what stakeholder outreach and engagement we have planned to kick off the eelgrass protection and management plan. If you see EPMP at any point in this presentation, it stands for Eelgrass Protection and Management Plan. I tried to catch them all and not include abbreviations, but I can't promise I caught them all. So about me, I'm a conservation biologist and cultural policy specialist. My background is in marine science. I did my graduate work studying sport fishing out of San Diego Bay. And I spent a number of years doing habitat restoration for sensitive coastal species. So my background really is in resource use conflict. When you think about sport fishing, when you think about our coast, it's a lot of people trying to use some shared resources. So that's really the perspective that I bring to this. I have worked in environmental consulting in the private sector for AMAC Foster Wheeler. I was adjunct faculty at the University of San Diego. And then most recently have been in nonprofit conservation for the past 10 years or so. And in July 2020, RBRA retained me and Coastal Policy Solutions, which is my consulting firm, to support the eelgrass protection measures. That's just a little bit about who I am. So then about eelgrass. I'm sure some of you are blue in the face hearing about eelgrass, but for those of you who are perhaps newer to this issue, I just want to provide that background so we're all working from an equal playing field. So eelgrass is one of the wonderful natural resources we have in Richardson Bay, and it is a seagrass and it's a flowering plant. So it's just like a grass you would find in a meadow, except it's underwater. So it breathes in carbon dioxide and exhales oxygen. It's found in shallow bays and estuaries and provides really important habitat for baby fish like Pacific herring, for Dungeness crabs, so a lot of foods that we like to eat. But then also food for birds. We have hundreds of thousands of migratory water birds that come through Richardson Bay every year, and they rely on those eelgrass resources and the mudflats and all of the fish that are have here during their migration. It's also important to remember that eelgrass supports, I mentioned Pacific herring, but that is the last commercial fishery left in San Francisco Bay. Eelgrass also provides other community benefits like reducing erosion, stabilizing our coastline, sequestering carbon, and reducing ocean acidification. So eelgrass really is one of those workhorse powerhouse ecosystems. We tend to think more about the rainforest or the redwoods, but right here at home we have eelgrass, maybe not thinking about it so much because it's under the water, but it's just as important. So talking specifically about Richardson's Bay, Richardson's Bay is an anchorage, and that's really the perspective that we're coming from when developing this eelgrass management plan. And boats have been anchoring here since at least the 1890s. And really a lot of the things that make Richardson Bay so attractive for boaters are really the same things that make it so accommodating for eelgrass. It's a shallow protected embayment. And really when there was a low number of well-maintained boats in Richardson's Bay, and when eelgrass was doing well regionally and worldwide, there was presumably modest, if at all, eelgrass damage, and there wasn't really a resource conflict. Where this started to become an issue was as eelgrass has declined regionally, and as we've seen an increase in boats and an increase in marine debris in Richardson Bay, that's really where we started to have problems for eelgrass and the species that it supports. I want to note that the two photos here, the top one is from the Sausalito Historical Society, and the bottom one was recently posted on the Sausalito Anchor Outs Facebook page, and I think that they show some of that great mariner history in Richardson's Bay. So unfortunately, this is more of what it looks like today. Though Richardson's Bay is the second largest eelgrass bed in San Francisco and it's very variable in size, we see some ongoing damage from the way that boats are anchoring and mooring in Richardson's Bay today. So these circles that you see here on the image, and the image is courtesy of Audubon, California. Those circles are called anchor scour or crop circles. And the amount of area removed from boats in Richardson Bay is between 50 and 80 acres. So it's about twice the size of Alcatraz Island has been removed from anchor scour. So we have this ongoing damage to an existing vital resource. We also have an anchorage here that's really important for mariners. And so we have to manage these eelgrass resources within the anchorage to meet some regional and statewide regulations and restoration targets. So with all of that as background, in June of 2020, as many of you know, the RBRA adopted this transition plan. And really what I'm working on is just policy direction 5. So I noted this in my report that was included in the board packet. And I should actually pause to say that that report has a little bit more detail about some of the stuff that I'm talking about here today. So I do encourage you to check out that report. But we're really focused on policy direction 5, which is about eelgrass. So this isn't getting into liveaboards or sunset clauses or safe and seaworthy or that type of stuff. This is saying, look, we know that this is an anchorage and we know that we have eelgrass. So how are we going to manage that eelgrass within Richardson's Bay? So policy direction 5 says that RBRA will work with agencies, organizations, and other stakeholders to develop eelgrass protection measures and consider specific eelgrass restoration funding and projects. So that's what I'm working on. So there's two main pieces to policy direction 5 in the transition plan. The first, which is actually what I'm going to talk about second, but the first has to do with some marine spatial planning that can be done within Richardson Bay. And then the second one has to do with applying for funding to support eelgrass work. So in speaking to that number 2 first, over the past couple of months, I worked with Curtis and with Beth, so Harbor Master Havel and former Executive Director Pollard. We submitted 3 letters of intent to funding agencies, and 2 we actually just got noticed today, so I got to amend this slide because first of all, we first only heard about 1. But so now 2 have been selected for the full application, which is really exciting. The first is a NOAA Marine Debris Grant, and then the second, and the NOAA grant, RBRA got that in 2019. So that's a continued funding from them, which is exciting. But, and then also the one we found out about today was Ocean Protection Council. So they have not before funded work in Richardson's Bay. They had a coastal resilience grant, RFP, from the Prop 68 money. That was a lot of letters. So if you don't know what all that means, basically it means that we have some funding coming in that will actually allow for implementation of this eelgrass management and protection plan. So what we developed together this fall and into the winter actually already has some money dedicated to implementing it. So that policy direction 1 about the zones, and that's what led us to this idea of the eelgrass protection and management plan. We want to protect what we have there and manage the resources in Richardson Bay, and we're doing it through a marine spatial planning approach, which really is a fancy way of saying we're going to look at Richardson Bay and figure out kind of how to slice it up to have different zones for various allowable uses. And so we're really looking to uses that are legal in the existing framework. So that's the 72-hour anchoring and then the 30-day permit anchoring. And then things like recreational boating, kayaking, stand-up paddleboarding, and figuring out where is going to be the best place for all of that to go within the RBRA's jurisdictional waters. This slide reminded me. So for those of you who are sticklers for accuracy, you might notice that some of these images are not technically from San Francisco Bay. I went for images that were, I went for form over function here. So trying to get a real emotional sense of what that eelgrass looks like, even if it's not technically from San Francisco Bay. So some keen eyes might catch that. But so how is this eelgrass protection and management plan being developed? It's really building on the work that RBRA has done. So the 2019 mooring feasibility study included some really good science, that eelgrass bathymetry, the frequency distribution. So basically, where are we finding eelgrass in Richardson Bay most frequently? Then also the anchoring and mooring distribution. So where are boats choosing to anchor and moor? And then also things like the wave modeling. So using the information from that feasibility study, even though that feasibility study was specifically for mooring, it had a lot of data that we can pull into this eelgrass protection and management plan. So it's not redundant or duplicate. So what we're doing now is not redundant or duplicative, but really builds on what we did in 2019. So that's one piece of it. We're also going to be looking at some state and federal guidance. So there's the California eelgrass mitigation policy that has really good information about, you know, if you're using eelgrass in certain ways, how to make sure that anything gets mitigated for. Again, though, I should note this, that this eelgrass protection management plan is not a mitigation project. We also have some great guidance from the Ocean Protection Council's strategic plan and the subtitle Habitat Goals Report that outlines some key eelgrass restoration targets for San Francisco Bay and for the state of California. And then the third piece of that is the stakeholder engagement. So the stakeholder engagement is happening in two main ways. The first is through what we're calling listening sessions on Zoom. They would be small group meetings if we were not in the time of COVID. It's going to be about 5 to 10 participants each, about an hour and a half long, and that's with some really targeted audiences. So we'll have one session for personnel representing agencies like Army Corps, Water Quality Control Board, BCDC, State Lands Commission, the sort of government agencies that are involved here. We'll have a separate session for scientists, a separate session for environmentalists, and we'll really have targeted questions during these sessions to make sure that we're getting early input from stakeholders that are really speaking to their specific knowledge. The second way we're doing stakeholder engagement is through what we're calling drawing sessions. These are outdoor, socially distanced, tech-free, open attendance, really trying to tap into the mariner knowledge that folks have who are spending time and have experience on the water. What we'll have there are printouts of Richardson Bay and drawing materials so people can actually draw on the maps of Richardson Bay with their suggestions of where the various allowable uses should go. The time, day, and location of those sessions is to be determined, and they will be posted on the ArborERA website and shared via social media. Some final thoughts. Okay, I know I threw a lot out you guys there. Hopefully some of the eelgrass stuff was reminders because I talk about eelgrass a lot. And then the transition plan is stuff that, you know, RBRA board has already looked at. But I'm happy to answer any questions about that. One thing I am hoping to get some feedback is if there's a best day, time, and location for those in-person socially distanced sessions. I know that things like tides can really affect how people can access the shoreline, so I want to make sure that we're doing those when people can really be there. I also wanted to make sure, you know, we're trying to be inclusive here, and I don't have email addresses for a lot of people. So if you have not yet been contacted by me and you have an email address, you can go to that link, that SurveyMonkey link, if you want to make sure that I have your email address for the stakeholder engagement. But note that you do not have to sign up for the in-person sessions. So that's just if you want to make sure that your contact information gets captured. And from there, I am happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you very much, Rebecca. Kate, you have any questions?
No, just a procedural. So I'm assuming the date, time, and location of the in-person session will be posted on the RBRA website. So, and there may be other ways to try to get that information out. So those folks who have not been contacted directly by Rebecca will be able to know when the meeting is and how to attend.
Absolutely. Like I said, it'll be on the website. It'll be on any RBRA social media. And then also posting it to there's a Facebook group that I know of, which is the Sausalito Anchor Outs Uncensored, you know, sharing it there. And then asking members of the community to also help us get the word out for those.
Great. Super.
Thank you. David, do you have any questions?
I don't, other than to say thank you for a great presentation.
And Claire?
Yeah, I do have a question. Rebecca, thank you for an excellent presentation. Very, very impressive, and looking forward to seeing the results of this work that's going to be so inclusive of the people on the water. My main question is this: what is your time frame? Do you have a time in mind when you'd like to be wrapped up with a presentation or results?
That is a great question, and that is a slide that I forgot to include. I think that those dates are included in the report to the board. I want to say that the listening sessions are going to happen over the next 2 weeks. So the mid 2 weeks of October, that's also when I'm hoping to schedule the drawing session. So it's going to be a kind of intense couple of weeks of getting some feedback. My goal is to have a draft, EPNP, so an actual draft plan to the RBRA board for the November meeting. I will caveat that by saying, if we get kind of overwhelmed with responses from the stakeholder engagement, we might break it into two and have a report back to you guys in November just based on the stakeholder engagement, and then the draft plan coming in December. I would love to get the draft in November though. So that's really going to be based on how much, you know, feedback we get. And then if we get the draft plan to you in November, then it'll be an updated draft in December based on feedback in November. So we're really hoping to do this fall and winter and not let it slip too far into the next calendar year. That also corresponds to a couple of enforcement committee meetings at BCDC, the Bay Conservation and Development Commission. There are enforcement committee meetings in both November and December where we will be providing progress reports.
Wonderful. Well, thank you very much. It's just terrific work. Very important. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Rebecca. This definitely falls in the transition plan that we have adopted back in June, and one of the major elements as we approach the BCDC and as we look forward to developing a long-term goal for the RBRA and addressing a variety of issues. So I look forward to the input from the mariners and from your scientists and everyone else to come with a compromise. And at this time, I'd like to open it up. Any questions from the public, can you please raise your hand and the moderator will let you in, and you have 2 minutes to ask any or make any comments toward this proposal that we have.
Chair Wickham, can you clarify, is it 2 minutes or 3 minutes?
We're going to make it, how many hands do we have that want to speak?
So far, only one hand.
Okay, so we'll give them the 3 minutes.
Okay, your first speaker is Robbie Paulson.
Okay, great. Hey, Robbie, how you doing?
Good evening, RBR board members. I'd like to direct this comment to Ms. Schwartz, and then I'd like to hand off to Jeff and Doug Storms, who are with me and who need help with the phone. Ms. Schwartz, I want you, it's very important that when you're doing this public outreach process that you do deep work, because right now there are stories of violence being perpetrated by Curtis Havel on Richardson Bay. On 24th, Curtis Havel made a young woman homeless.
Hey, Robbie.
I'm talking about this.
Let's talk about the presentation right now.
This needs to
be
part of the
presentation.
This is part of this.
It
is a part of it. Haley Allen, and her story wouldn't have been told because Curtis Havel states that it's an unoccupied boat. You know, that is, if I had not come down there and videotaped it and get in there and see how he had recklessly thrown her boat to the side, recklessly. I mean, that has nothing to do with board policy, the way he just flipped it over, the sewage spilling on precious, irreplaceable items. That's callousness. And you know, stories like Sandy Bones, all these things need to come out because it's not being told. And if this stakeholder outreach program is tokenization to try and smooth over these rough edges of violence that we're seeing on Richardson Bay, of making people homeless during a pandemic. I mean, Haley Allen, a young woman, a native of Marin, who's taking care of an elderly mother. And there's a balance between environmentalism, but environmentalism safeguarded by violence against poor people is not true environmentalism. And that needs to be right to the forefront. I'm going to pass it off to Jeff now. And I talk about Sandy Bones, man, and Naked Dave, man. That's a sad story.
This is from the transmission from the Mariners, who are still here on Richardson's Bay, despite decades' attempt to eradicate them legally and illegally. We will talk about the latter right now. This is Chris's 12 commandments that he's handed out. He's had 8 of these 12 commandments returned. He's had refusals from 100 people out here.
So what's this have to do with the presentation?
I will talk about it specifically.
Okay, well, you're running out of time.
Number six. These are added rules only for Mariners who are anchored on Richardson Bay, not for anybody in the Marine, not for anybody transiting. One of them is criminal activity. Any criminal activity is grounds for removal of a boat. Now, the criminal activity that has happened was from a Mariner who I invited here many years ago, who was provoked by Curtis Hovel when he left his unconstitutional 12 commandments on her boat. That if he intends to criminalize the element that he dislikes, somewhat sadistically it seems, then he is acting illegally, unethically, immorally, and he can expect that everything that he does will certainly come back on him. That in no way am I looking at a perfect person here. In no way does he have the right to come from Novato and decide who stays and who goes. That is not his privilege, and that is not his duty. It is, however, his salary. Thank you very much.
Okay, is there anyone else?
Yes.
Raise your hand, the moderator.
We do have additional hands raised. I wasn't sure if anyone else is on Robbie's end there.
Yeah, there is.
Okay, well, how many? It's one phone, one person. Who's next?
Three people.
It's Doug.
Third person, Doug Storms.
And your hands are up.
Yeah, thank you. Sorry about that, guys. Yeah, Doug Storms. Welcome to the meeting. Glad that you're providing this opportunity for us to share. I'm happy that Rebecca is on the job there. I'm really impressed with her credentials. A suggestion that I would like to make is I didn't quite understand everything, but I believe that one part was to reach out to the community and have community input. Unfortunately, you know, I've taken part over the last 3 decades that I've been here. There's been outreach, and you know, for these different workshops and effort, but they turn out to be really like a dog and pony show. It's 2 hours, and the actual time after all the important people are introduced, there's very small amount of time to discuss the issues. And so my concern is, and I look forward to working with Rebecca to really have not only to have a good meeting, a workshop, and to give ample time so that the issues are really flushed out, but that I'm hoping, Rebecca, that you get an opportunity or make an opportunity to come out and to actually see what we see. And so I have a little bit, you know, there are many people that live out there and they live with the eelgrass. And so there's that firsthand experience, observation, people that live with it. It's just that we just don't do a study, come out one time every 3 years or something like that. We live with it on a daily cycle. And so it's really important to have that community input. And if you read the Merkel and Associates, the mooring feasibility study and the environmental impact, on the last slide or next to the last slide, Merkel had said it is critical to get the community input. And he really highlighted that. And so I just want to really encourage you to work with the Mariners. Thank you very much. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Is there anyone else who'll raise a hand?
Yes, we have more hands raised. Your next speaker is Anand.
Okay.
Hi. I would like to keep my anonymity due to fear of being targeted out on Richardson Bay. I'm a mariner, and in regards to the presentation that Rebecca gave, I would like to see scientific evidence of the destruction of the eelgrass with these crop circles of which you deemed. It's actually a boat that is on its own scope on deeply drove anchors. And so it may appear that these anchors are moving, destroying eelgrass, but they're not, especially when one puts a swivel on their ground tackle. I would also like to see a measurement as recorded officially of the decline in any fish or bird populations that thrive within the eelgrass. And I just need to see more evidence that there is actual damage in result of the anchored boats directly, and how much damage is also measured from the sewage municipality leakage in retrospect of the damage towards the eelgrass, if this is such an important part of the ecological system in Richardson Bay. I also want to note that I have been in many violent altercations as well, and in so much fear, I have made phone calls to certain individuals in the Navy in reference to the October 15th deadline. And I just would hope that you are sincere, Rebecca, in coming out and meeting some of the people that also pay tax dollars and do pay their taxes every time we go to the store. We're a really important part of this community. People come from all around the world to see the nostalgic heritage of Sausalito and Richardson Bay. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Anna.
Your next speaker is Barbara Salzman.
Okay, have you unmuted me? I'm still getting it.
You're unmuted, Barbara.
Okay, thanks for opening this up for public input, and I'm looking forward to participating with the understanding that, of course, our position is that we support BCDC's position that there should be anchor outs out of the bay within 5 years. But I have a question. I wondered if the reports, all of the reports from the project, would be available for the public.
This would probably be very transparent.
Okay, so is that a yes assurance?
I can't imagine any confidential report that would not be released to the public. So okay. I can say at this point, unless it's something I'm not aware of, should be very transparent.
Good. Okay. That's all.
Thank you very much, Barbara.
Your next speaker.
Okay, next.
Your next speaker is Eva, followed by Denise, followed by phone ending in 734. Eva, please go ahead.
Hi, Eva Crisanti. I wanted to thank Rebecca for the presentation. It was very interesting, and I hope that everyone working on this project will bear in mind how useful the mariners can be in providing real-time assessments of what's going on, and they can provide data points if you enlist them in the project. If you don't, they can't. I'd also hope that we could maintain a little more awareness from the side of really good environmental organizations and wildlife organizations like the Audubon Society. It is a little bit hypocritical for someone from the Audubon Society who lives in a $2 or $3 million house, I think a $3.5 million house, I'm not sure, to maintain such a specific position on the mariners. It's really problematic.
there is no real environmentalism if it's not also taking into account, one, how environmentalism, you know, claims of environmentalism can be used, to marginalize poor people. And certainly the Mariners constitute a vulnerable population. And, secondly, there's a long history of, that sort of abuse, and especially in California. So hopefully, I'm really hoping that the Audubon Society, which has made real strides in terms of understanding environmental justice and social justice, can continue in that vein and maybe take a look at its current position against the Mariners. And if it's so set on the importance of moving Mariners off of their boats in the middle of a pandemic, which I find highly questionable, and I'll be in touch with Barbara about that. But if they're so set on that, I think they really need to carve out permanent housing for each one of those Mariners. And I wish that Barbara would put a little more emphasis into understanding the larger picture. I thank you for your time, and I thank RBRA for its work.
Okay, Ava.
Next speaker is Denise, followed by phone ending in 734, followed by Melanie. Denise, please go ahead.
I just wanted to say thank you very much for the great work, the informative work. I'm keeping my comments specific to the eelgrass research day, which is what I thought the purpose of the meeting was for. I did have a question about what, if any, consideration is going to be included in the report relative to carbon sequestering and the impact of eelgrass, particularly in light of the current environmental situation as well as fire. I didn't hear anything about that, but maybe this is my first meeting, so it's possible I missed something.
Okay. Rebecca, you want to respond to that?
Wait till the end.
Okay, we'll wait until the end. Okay, so Denise, we'll wait until the end there. I'm just trying to speed this thing up. A little voice told me. Okay, thank you, Denise. Next, please.
The next speaker is phone ending in 734, followed by Melanie, followed by Ann. Caller, please go ahead. You need to unmute yourself. There we go. Caller ending in 734, you're unmuted. Please go ahead. Okay, it looks like maybe they're having some trouble. Shall I move on to the next speaker?
Yes, please.
Okay. The next speaker is Melanie. Melanie, please go ahead. You'll need to unmute.
Okay, I unmuted. Thank you very much. We have the particular inhabitants of the Richardson Bay Settlement Enclave have a list of our own that we would like to see followed by the RBRA. What we have done here, we've created a new acronym, and it is WATSATORBA, which is the Waters and Shores and Tidelands of Richardson Bay Anchorage. And what we would like is to state the actions that we find questionable, and then we have stated also how that can be remedied. And so let's see, our first one would be the RBRA conducts actions on the WATSATORBA with questionable uncertainty of jurisdictional authority. The RBRA must and shall obtain and produce proof of all actions conducted on the WATSATORBA. That would be what we would like to see. And the RBRA conducts actions on the WATSATORBA that violate the due process of law. The remedy for that, we would like to see the RBRA that they would must and shall submit to United States constitutional law and California constitution of common law that governs the WATSATORBA. The RBA uses local municipal power of authority to conduct illegal theft and destruction of personal property on the WATSATORBA, and we feel the RBRA must and shall discontinue the practice of using county law enforcement to conduct unconstitutional boat seizures and crushings on the WATSATORBA. The RBRA encroaches upon the civil rights of residents on the WATSATORBA, so we feel that the RBRA must and shall discontinue the tyranny of U.S. citizens practicing their constitutional rights and way of life on the Wasatorba. The RBRA has violated illegal posting by doing illegal postings and boat seizures and destruction of personal property, which is creating homelessness during a pandemic, and shelter-in-place orders from government, federal and state government in California. We feel that the RBRA must and shall cease activity that creates homelessness during a pandemic, shelter-in-place order from the state of California and from federal law. The inhabitants of the Wasatorba do not believe that these demands are, that we've stated here, are inaccurate, unrealistic, and or unlawful, and detailed legal references to the United States Constitution are on file with the Richardson Bay Settlement and the Wasatorba Archives, newly formed. Thank you.
Thank you, Millie. Thank you for commenting on item number four. Any more comments for item number four on the agenda?
There's one more, two more speakers. Your next speaker is Ann, followed by Elias.
And we're on item number four regarding the report by Rebecca.
Yes.
Do you have any comments on the report?
I have a question, actually. Great presentation, Rebecca. My question is, how, if at all, will there be input from sailors not permanently anchored on Richardson Bay, but who in the future might be interested in the transit use that is approved under the RBRA rules, and assuming that that will still be taking place, how that's integrated into the proper location to minimize impact to the eelgrass.
Okay, we'll get to that at the end. Thank you very much.
The next, last please. Speaker is Elias. Elias, please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes. All right. Thank you, Rebecca, for your PowerPoint. I appreciate learning about the eelgrass. I was an Audubon member about 15 years ago. I took an ornithology class with Joe Mueller at College of Marin. Got to learn about birds. It was really wonderful. I was friends with Bruce Bima before he passed away more than a decade ago. He was a big part of the Marin Audubon, and I attended a lot of his lead trips. I enjoy bird watching a lot. It's still my favorite pastime, and I invest a lot of money in nice binoculars. I love watching wildlife. I'm also an environmental scientist by training, and I did my graduate work at USC. I'm very concerned about the lack of an equity lens in the presentation today. From what I'm hearing, people are having their humanity questioned and being put out of their homes over something that is easily resolved. I'm not hearing about, stuff that I've read about in the reports you guys have commissioned that will mitigate the impact of the boats. I'm not hearing about eelgrass-friendly moorings. I'm not hearing about the Audubon Society, which, I mean, was a society that I used to be a part of and loved. I'm not hearing about them using their immense resources and wealth to celebrate the lives of these people who live in harmony with nature. And that's really troubling to me. I see people in tears because their houses are getting destroyed. And I just can't bring that to terms with, saving a few acres of eelgrass. I do understand the importance of eelgrass. I'm an environmental scientist. I'm a nature lover. I'm a bird watcher. Eelgrass is important, but I can't put that ahead of people's lives. There's children out there, There's mothers out there, there's people who live out there who are taking care of other folks, and if you take their boats away, they're going to be homeless, and we're in the middle of a pandemic. I mean, I need the Audubon.
Okay, you got about 5 seconds.
To do something about this.
Okay, thank you very much. All right, Rebecca, you got a couple questions here on carbon sequestration and then also on input from sailors who might be transient. Do you have any response to that? You got to unmute yourself. There we go.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for all of those comments and questions. And I'll do my best to speak to you. I take lots of notes, so I'll do my best to speak to those briefly, but hopefully comprehensively. I'm just going to go in order of the speakers. Mr. Powelson, I really take to heart your notes about, you know, ensuring that this is not tokenization of the Mariners. Really what I'm looking for in those sessions that we'll be hosting is to capture the depth of knowledge that the Mariners have of Richardson Bay. So for whatever I can say, I hear your concerns, and I have a long history of working in stakeholder engagement, and I agree with you that tokenization is not an effective strategy for, you know, building consensus about or moving towards consensus. So I hear you. Mr. Chase, I believe you were speaking more to the Safe and Seaworthy program. Mr. Storms, again, I hear you about avoiding the dog and pony show at the in-person ones. It'll really be mostly a drawing session. You know, I'll provide a bit of information about the eelgrass and what we're doing, but mostly it's an opportunity to get feedback. So there's not going to be a lot of presentations by big wigs. And then also, I agree with the, elevating that lived experience of people with experience on the bay. So thank you. To the woman who spoke anonymously, once we post this presentation online, there are some listed citations in there about studies that document the damage to the eelgrass, because I know there was a question about evidence of the impacts of the ground tackle, so we can certainly make those available. And if you want to email me, I can also share studies with you if you are looking for the data. But I do want to say that, you know, you mentioned some alternate anchoring techniques, and that also came out later in some comments. That is something that we will definitely want to be capturing, is, there's the conservation moorings and other ways of reducing impacts from ground tackle. So there is definitely technology that can reduce damage. The comment about sewage damage, absolutely, sewage spills are a problem, and, you know, when they are identified, legal action is taken, and, you know, all that points to for me is that, you know, protecting eelgrass and protecting the natural environment on Richardson Bay isn't a single front battle, and really takes people working at it from all sides. So please do elevate those sewage issues. I don't work on it personally, but we can certainly connect you with folks, for example, at the Regional Water Quality Control Board. Barbara, the question about, Ms. Solomon from the Marin Audubon, the question about will the reports be available? Yes, everything I produce will be available. I'll be putting it in board packets, can send it to people directly. I've got nothing to hide. So those will be shared both proactively, and if people want them, can share them specifically. Denise, your question about carbon sequestration. So we're not going to be doing a specific blue carbon valuation for the eelgrass bed in Richardson Bay. There are some newer and good methodologies for valuing, like really putting a dollar value on the amount of blue carbon that can be captured by eelgrass beds. That's not going to be the focus of this management plan. This is more how and where we can protect and restore eelgrass. But that's a really important additional value of that eelgrass bed, is that blue carbon and is that carbon sequestration. So it's not going to be a focus of this. But it is important. And if I can provide any more information, feel free to reach out to me directly. I hope that answered your question. I see you nodding, so I'm hopeful. Melanie, I believe you were speaking more towards some other actions of our BRA, not so much the eelgrass. So moving on to Anne Libin, your question about, input from sailors. That's a great question. I currently don't have specific contacts for people who use the bay in that transitory way. I can certainly connect with Curtis. I know there's some people who've tried to use it recently and maybe had to move on because of some of the climate out there. So
as much as we can capture people who are using the Anchorage in that 72-hour capacity, I would love to. I'm also a sailor myself. I know that Curtis is. And so if you have any other people who use the bay in that more recreational sense and can send them my way, happy to capture as much of that information as possible. And then Elias, I love the fellow birder. You know, we all have that in common. You know, this is not a situation that unfortunately is easily to resolve. If this was easily resolved, we would have done it decades ago. This is hard. And the piece that I'm working on is specifically eelgrass protection and rest and management. The other pieces about, you know, the Safe and Seaworthy program and opportunities to, you know, really protect the people who are on the water, and who are vulnerable communities are happening elsewhere in RBRA. So I don't have too much to speak to that other than, you know, I do hope that we can find a solution that both maintains the anchorage and protects the natural resources out there. I think I captured everything. If not, feel free to email me.
Did a great job, Rebecca. Thank you very much. Any board members, you have any other questions?
Not Kate? A question, but there. I just say, Rebecca, it's great to have you back and full of energy and positive attitude and your good background. And it's going to be a good study. So thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Good. Okay. So we'll go into the next topic. Oh, Claire, you have a, no. Okay. Before we go into open public time, I just want to say a couple of things is that, you know, Kate Sears, myself, probably now are the longest board members on the RBRA, going on my fifth year here. And we've had a lot of outreach. We've had coffees with the Mariners. We've had tons of meetings. We brought on Beth Tallert to hold workshops. And back in June, we came to a conclusion of a transition plan that hopefully would work with our stakeholders and start addressing some of the issues that the BCDC has that is kind of putting pressure on us to come up with a long-term plan. And we have not set a sunset date on this, and we're going to move forward. But I do want to say this right now to everyone listening out there is that the intimidation of RBRA staff on the bay or elsewhere is not acceptable, okay? Must be condemned. It will not be tolerated by the RBRA, okay? The harbor master is doing his job. He's representing our authority. And if any member of the public takes issue with the RBRA actions, the way to express opposition or concern is coming to the public meetings, coming to our coffees, and or writing letters to us. But the staff right now, Curtis and our future second harbor master, they're doing their job. We totally support them. So you got to work with us because intimidation is not going to pay off for you. And I just want to bring that right now as we get into this open public time. We got to respect each other as we move forward with this plan and working together on it. So we're going to open public time. So if you have anything you want to bring up right now, please raise your hand. You have 3 minutes to express your concern. Thank you very much.
The first speaker is Robbie Palson, followed by Rebecca. Robbie?
No, you go first.
Hello? Yeah. Robbie's going to speak after me, okay? Doug Storms, I want to say thank you for the board for meeting for coffee with the Mariners the past couple years. I think we made great progress during that time. Unfortunately, at the last meeting that we had, and I've been meeting with Curtis. For the last 8 months, it's been a difficult time during the coronavirus, the pandemic that we have. It's very frustrating to have this open process during a pandemic. And that's the first thing that I wanted to say. The second thing is that we're at the point where I talked with the board last week, and what I didn't express with them is that there is legal action being taken by Mariners because they feel as though their rights as citizens, as Mariners, are being thwarted. And so I know of three legal actions, three separate entities, one to the federal courts, one to the Marin County Superior Court, and there's another effort in the federal courts to address the issues, because the issues that we're bringing up, and I express this, I'm very transparent. I've talked with Curtis about this, and I talked to the board. The Mariners feel under siege. If your house was under siege, you would do everything and anything. Take legal actions, make your voice be heard at public meetings. Oh, wait, you can't make your voice be really heard at public meetings because we're not having public meetings. It's called a Zoom. And so the very population that's out here is not, they don't live in a $3 million house. You know, they live on their sailboat. There's no place during this time to come in. We're standing in front of the library. That library's closed. So there's no public place to meet. There's no places to really charge up your phone. It's been shut down. So right during this critical time that legal action is being taken, that enforcement is being taken, the very population that's being targeted, their hands are tied behind their back. And so they're forced to take various actions. This is not done. Richardson Bay is made out of various communities. Different people are doing what they feel that they can do, are taking legal actions. Bottom line is this. I know my 3 minutes is coming up. I do not believe in my discussions with Curtis. I had 13 items that I went through. There is no budging on his part. And I met again. I talked with him again. And there is really very little movement on his part. There's not the cooperation. So your emphasis is on eelgrass. And I've shared with you the underwater hazards should be a priority. Triaging the boats and addressing those boats that are going to be causing loss of life and property.
Hey, Doug,
should be dealt with.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
Jeff, would you like to say anything?
Yeah.
Ahoy again from Richardson's Bay. As far as asking us not to intimidate the staff of RBRA, I feel a karma trampoline happening when forces from Novato, from Sacramento, from Washington, D.C., from whatever banks are paying your salary and Rebecca's new salary as a member of RBRA, formerly of the Audubon Society, in a concerted effort to intimidate a community that was here long before you were born, that you had made a promise not to target any occupied boats while there was a coronavirus happening. That promise was broken with Haley's boat. Yes, she was on her boyfriend's boat. Yes, maybe she hadn't been on that boat that day. Her boat was taken. All of her personal goods were destroyed. We will be fighting legally. We have 5 lawsuits now, hundreds of thousands of dollars, but we're not expecting any victories there. We will use every means necessary to make sure that we are not intimidated, that we remain American citizens and human beings, not subject to destruction and a death cult. So the fact that you are well-funded and being paid, and that the people that are working for you live in million-dollar houses, and we have not done environmental studies on their houses, nor on your house, but we easily could. We could decide how much carbon you use, where you are dumping, where your drawbacks in life are. To use environmentalism against poor people is Shonda for the Goyim. It's a shame that there are any Jewish people, Shana Tova, Happy New Year, that are using in the environment and eelgrass to destroy a legacy community. So my heart as an Israelite says, please, please do not just be concerned about your check, about your gold, about your silver, about the idols of law and order that you are worshiping. Instead, worship the only one who needs worshiping and help Jah's people. He is very concerned. God is very concerned with the people who are the poorest. Those are his people. Any attempt to hurt them will make what we are suffering now look small. Do not bring any more suffering on our community. Do not bring any more suffering on our land. We have enough. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. Next, please.
Yeah, so I would just say that right now, you know, I had the opportunity to actually talk with one of the law firms that's suing the RBRA, not just for violating the Fourth Amendment of making people homeless, but during a pandemic, nonetheless. I mean, it's shocking. But also how you're manipulating harbor and navigation code to do this campaign. Okay, when Haley Allen's boat was taken and recklessly, carelessly flipped on its side, all of her possession covered in just sewage because Curtis Havel didn't have the decency to take care of her boat. Well, doesn't the RBRA's own code say that when a boat gets impounded, that it should be held for 10 days? I mean, why was it that there was this early morning raid? She was 200 feet away from her boat. She saw it being dragged away with all of her possessions, and it got destroyed immediately. Where's the due process? You know, you say she had a warning. Well, what happens is people get warnings, and then because they have nowhere to go, they just stay because there's literally no other options. That's why the Boise case, when you have a lack and absence of housing, you're not allowed to make people homeless. People don't have a place to go. And then you violate harbor navigation code because you use a small infractions on boats. And the thing is, harbor navigation code says that really there are very specific statutes that define marine debris. If a boat has some issue with steering or something that's fixable, you can't just impound it and destroy it on the exact same day. And I'm willing to stand up and continue this fight because I know that you people are breaking the law, and it is going to come out in federal court. And in the meantime, we're just going to keep our people safe, prevent any more people from becoming homeless, because when Curtis did that, he broke a promise. And I'm disappointed that the RBRA board is not holding him accountable for doing that. I mean, that is something shocking. And I'm just some new mariners showing up. Do you want to say a moment to the RBRA?
I would like to say something if nobody said anything about Sandra.
Oh, yeah.
Like right after Dave died, like the very next day, that boat was.
Can you please state your name and please?
My name, Brian Doris.
Okay, Brian, go ahead.
Richardson Bay.
You got 3 minutes. Go ahead, Brian.
Okay. One of the things that I didn't like at all was David Bones. He's a mariner out here for years, probably one of the longest out here. And he died, and not within 48 hours, his wife was still living on the boat. That boat was taken and crushed. So she lost her home right after she lost her husband. And that's, I mean, it's hard to calm down. You know what I mean? It's hard to calm down. I don't need all 3 minutes. I'm done.
Thank you. Is there anyone else?
Matthew? No, that's it.
Okay, thank you. Any other hands raised?
Yes, your next speaker is Rebecca, followed by Melanie, followed by Ava.
Okay.
Rebecca, please go ahead.
Hi, I actually live in Fairfax, but I learned about what's going on in Richardson Bay. And in fact, that's where I started out in Marin County in 1982. I was a maid in one of those big mansions that overlooks Richardson Bay, you know, and I used to hear people that I was working for, very wealthy people and in that neighborhood, complain about it. I co-founded a sustainability organization several years ago, and part of sustainability is equity. And I'm very concerned. It's my understanding that a lot of people had to leave other places where they were anchored out, and, you know, they were driven out of those places, and they joined the community on Richardson Bay. The conditions that we have here in California and in this country make so many of our people homeless. And it seems to me that these people are being punished for those conditions. and that, you know, it's not their fault that the eelgrass is at risk, because they need a place to live, you know. And I have a friend who is elderly. She has a brain injury. She can't find, through Marin Housing, through Health and Human Services, a place to live. She lives on Social Security. That's, you know, $1,125 a month and $198 on CalFresh. And she has a roommate, but almost all her money goes for rent. She could easily be one of the, you know, an anchor out. And so it is unfathomable to me. What is the rush here during COVID that these people would be, you know, persecuted like this? I'm embarrassed as a citizen of Marin, as someone who has been civically active, to hear, you know, this discussion as if, you know, it's just suddenly we have to take care of the eelgrass. Like right now during COVID, you know, we have so many environmental things that we have to take care of. We have so many housing issues coming up simply because of climate change. You know, if we think that we are going to have to deal with housing now, what about as sea level rise? What about as we get further and further burned out? I do not understand why I am hearing these stories of cruelty to people who are in circumstances that most of the people on this call can't imagine having to live through. You know, Kate, I know you personally. I don't understand. I really just don't understand. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, please.
Next speaker is Melanie, followed by Ava, followed by Elias. Melanie, please go ahead.
Okay. Hi. Thank you, guys. And I probably came off sounding very, I mean, I heard you say something about anyone who threatens or intimidates, and I wasn't trying to intimidate. I just do believe that this legacy community is so precious and very special. I know there's challenges. I know there's all kinds of issues like addiction and violence and just trauma. But overall, these people that I've met on Richardson Bay, and I've been here since March, have become family and very good friends of mine. And I'm actually a radical, nonviolent pacifist in every way. And I don't believe in violence at all. I'm a turn the other cheek person for sure. And so I'm not trying to intimidate at all, but I do believe there are certain things that should happen for us to become a legacy community. And we we did register with the census, and it was really strange to us that right after we registered with the census and posted it on the website, an Anchor Out website, that three boats got completely taken away. I know one was a probate, but as we were speaking about Haley Allen's boat, that was like taken and immediately crushed, and it almost seemed retaliatory. But I just think that this is a legacy community that should be preserved, and it's got a wonderful history, even though, you know, there's been fights and wars about it. But now we can come to a place of peaceable problem solving. And I just think that giving us our sovereignty on those waters, it could change everything. Who knows? We could create a tourism type thing, because this is like the last hippie independent community that is around anymore. The hate is ruined. The hate is closed down. And we would be, I think, a great tourist attraction for people, you know, from Europe and England. They love that kind of stuff. You know, a lot of people like the whole hippie experience, and it's all but dead pretty much, except for some people with certain ethics, and of those I share. So I'm not trying to be completely bossy about it, but I do believe that there are certain things that should take place that would create sovereignty for us and peace for you. So thank you.
Thank you, Melanie.
Your next speaker is Ava, followed by Elias, followed by Denise. Ava, please go ahead.
Hi, I just wanted to touch base on this particular issue since everyone's talking about it. I have some thoughts about whether it's appropriate to continue smashing viable fiberglass structures, which RBRA continues to do. It's a process that is not without environmental costs, when California is already struggling with poor air quality and high particulate. Further, I need to point out that people displaced from their boat housing will likely be using more plastics, et cetera, in trying to create housing for themselves on land if none is available. And of course, they will be at greater risk of contracting COVID-19, which, if they're lucky enough to enter the hospital, also has a significant environmental cost in terms of medical equipment. And almost none of that is reusable or recyclable. I reached out to Curtis Hovel. He called me back. We had a lovely conversation about the overall situation. We had a nice talk on 9/11, and he reiterated his concerns about the safety of people living on the bay, which is a sentiment I share. I tried to impress upon Mr. Hovel what I learned from years of working in emergency rooms, helping to care for unhoused individuals, which is that without permanent affordable housing, the mariners would likely be less safe if they were removed from their anchorage spots. I encouraged Mr. Hovel to at least acknowledge to the mariner population that he understood the risks they faced and that he understood that the housing affordability crisis was real, as I thought it would make his own task somewhat easier. It was my impression from this cordial phone conversation that Mr. Hovel was not inclined to moderate or evolve his current approach, which I think is unfortunate. I understand there are two permanent housing spots available that he's been able to put forth, but the number of boats that are being crushed is well beyond that, and so it seems there's really an imbalance in terms of what's happening. And the worst thing is as we're seeing the COVID crisis worsen with so little leadership on the national level, with everyone in Marin County doing their best, Dr. Willis and the Board of Supervisors doing their best to you know, make sure that this doesn't get worse. The last thing we want to do is take people out of the one place where they can self-isolate. So there has to be a better way, and I really want to encourage RBRA to reconsider its current approach and really for the Marin Audubon Society also to look at what it might be missing in its approach. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Our next speaker is Elias, followed by Denise. Elias, please go ahead.
Sorry. Hi. I want to start by saying thank you so much to all the Anchor Out folks who spoke. It's really heartwarming to hear your stories, and I so appreciate you taking the time to come out here and speak to the community under such dire circumstances. I'm speaking today because I'm just absolutely appalled by the support that I'm seeing for destroying people's houses. And as an environmentalist, as a nature lover, as a former Audubon member, I'm just heartbroken to see an organization that could be working for good being such a negative force in our community. This is going to have huge knock-on effects. I mean, immediately we can see what's, you know, how it's affecting the Anchor Out community. What about, you know, all the young children who are going to learn about this and not feel comfortable spending time with nature organizations because of this absolutely horrible relationship that our local nature organizations have with poor people. I mean, there's just such an archaeology in this country of forced migration perpetuated by environmentalism. And I would urge people who are interested in the Audubon to go ahead and look up James Audubon plus the word white supremacy, because he was a white supremacist. He was a slave owner. And the Audubon has stated on their website that they removed his biography because of that. They have a deep history of trading in very, very bad behavior that has harmed a lot of people. And they have a lot of money and they have a lot of resources, and they certainly don't need to be evicting people from their houses or supporting the eviction of people from their houses, destroying livelihoods. Okay. They recently had a meeting on intersectionality, which they posted on YouTube. I strongly urge everyone here to go take a look at that and consider the hypocrisy of discussing intersectionality and, you know, racism while they're taking away families' homes and making them homeless during a pandemic.
Okay, thank you, Owen. I appreciate it. All right, next, please.
Your next speaker is Denise, followed by Barbara. Denise, you need to unmute.
Yes, hi. I'm just wondering.
Good job, Denise.
Sorry, should I repeat that? There was some background noise.
Yeah, I didn't quite catch it.
Yeah, I was just wondering if there are public records or police reports about said violence that is occurring on the boats.
If they notify local police department, the local agency should have a copy of a report. But we won't take any questions here at this point. So you have any other comments?
No, thank you.
Thank you. Next, please.
Your next speaker is Barbara. Barbara, please go ahead. Barbara, you'll need to unmute.
I'm trying to. Yeah, I just wanted to say a few words in view of the attacks on us, just to remind the, well, actually, some of you are new, so you probably don't know this, but many, you know, we've been involved in this issue. We've been waiting to have the bay better protected and cleared for since the Richardson Bay Special Area Plan was adopted. We participated in that way back then. It was 35 years ago. And also that as of maybe a couple of years ago, I recall that I was actually the first one who began to urge your board to get some social welfare help for the people who live on the bay. And it is, as you know, it is a mixed bag. There are some people who are quite in need of help. There are other people who can, who do not need to live there. And they can fend for themselves on land. But we fully support all of the things that you are doing, and we're pleased to see you're doing them to try and move people off of the water. It's not even a very safe place to live, as you know. And anyway, that's where we're coming from. It's our goals and purposes are environmental, but we fully understand that there's help that is needed for a lot of the people that live out there. So thank you for listening.
Thank you, Barbara.
There are no more hands raised.
Okay, I'll close open public time at this point. So we have staff updates.
Yes, thank you. So I wanted to let the board know that we have had a successful recruitment for the position of Assistant Harbor Master. We have a very competitive pool of candidates that I just spoke with HR Human Resources today, and we're hoping to do the first round of interviews in the next 2 weeks, and then we'll do the second round of interviews either at late October or early November, and I'm hoping to get a full-time assistant harbor master on board, ideally in the month of November. So I'm really trying to push forward with that. Beyond that, that's what I've got for staffing. Does the board have any questions about?
I know Dave was his last day yesterday, correct? He went back to Idaho?
Yes, sir. That's correct. he's pursuing other opportunities and taking his family off to Idaho.
Okay. Is there any board member doing? Does anyone on the board has anything what they want to bring up? Kate, Claire, or no one? Okay. Yeah, at that point, then I'd like to adjourn tonight's meeting. We'll be reconvening next month at a regular meeting. I want to thank everyone for participating. This is a fluent working document, and we are listening to you. We are hearing all the stakeholders, and we will move forward. But definitely, your voice is not being denied, and we do appreciate your input. So, thank you, and I adjourn the meeting.